हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Lesson 34, page 67, lesson 34. Any man can attain to transcendental loving service of Godhead by his own occupation. 1846. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings, and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. Everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Hrishikesha, the master of the senses. And by the results of the work in which one is engaged, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, should be worshipped. If one thinks always in this way, in full Krishna consciousness, then by the grace of the Lord, he becomes fully aware of everything. That is the perfection of life. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 12.7, Tesham aham Samudharta. The Supreme Lord Himself takes charge of delivering such a devotee. That is the highest perfection of life. In whatever occupation one may be engaged, if he serves the Supreme Lord, he will achieve the highest perfection. Okay, so here we're establishing is that the Lord has come to deliver the living entities, right? He comes himself, he sends his assistants. They give knowledge about Krishna, right? That's the actual thing that works. That's what saves one. And anybody can take part, right? Whatever the situation. And the process is to take one's occupation and engage it in the Lord's service. That means that you understand you have this work by the Lord's grace, right? Because you have that nature and everything. So He's given the work for that nature. Right? We have particular desires and needs. Because of those desires and needs, we have developed particular, senses. We're in a particular situation. And so that situation and occupation, that situation and that nature then has an occupation that goes with it. So that's God-given, right? It's not made up. It's just natural, right? You like to deal with money, and you like money. You like mathematics. You like sitting at a desk and chair. Then you'll be an accountant. You understand? It goes naturally, like that. You like all those, and therefore you're going to be a sports newscaster, like that. Does that make sense? It's not going to work. Maybe you could sit down at the thing and here comes the 9 and it's 9, he's coming around the corner and he's merging with the 6 and we have a 15. Yeah, wasn't that great, folks? Okay, maybe you get that, but I don't know that many people would tune in to listen to, a very exciting explanation of today's accounts, like that.
Short career.
Yeah, it might be very short, like that. I'm sure you probably get a few nerds that would find it amusing, but other than that. Okay. So the idea is that we have the ideas, I could do this or not. Or, you could interpret it that way or not. as we were just discussing upstairs in the Manu class, is that the creation is described first. First there's creation. And that creation means the primary creation, right? What's done before Brahma's creation. So that means all the principles of creation. You know, what is human life? What does it do? What's right and wrong? You know, what are all the different activities, all the situations you can function in, like that? You know, it means you have the land, the sky, the air, the mountains, the valleys, you know, all these, whatever there is, situations where people live, that's already been created. Right? Then the principle of what's right and wrong is created. That's where Varnashram comes in, right? The law. So God's already defined the law and what's right and wrong and who does what. And those natures, he says, are just as created like previous universe. Right? Now the Veda being apurusheya means it's never spoke, it's never written, right? It's always been there. So that means then, and it's defining this. So he's creating it like it was before and according to the Veda. Right? So that means there's no change. And this is the law. So that's there before the creation. That means God's law and what's right and wrong and what everyone should do is done before Brahma even creates the living entities. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means the idea of, well, I make up my own idea, it doesn't work. It doesn't follow. So here we can understand is that the particular kind of occupation is given by Rishikesha. Like that. You have a particular set of senses, you have particular interests, therefore the occupation is already established. Right? What you will do. I mean, what varna you'd be in, what ashram you'd be in. You know, what would be the natural progression? That's all, yes.
If it's natural and the harmony is there, then why people are not happy with what they are doing?
Means if you're taking a generic thing, are you taking meaning devotees? Or because there's
devotees,
two discussions. It means there's the discussion of why is it the common man in his, you know, place of occupation is not satisfied. Another thing is you know, if devotees are satisfied or not with the concept of performing their duties according to Varnashram. I would take it as two different things. Because the one is that, are they actually situated according to how they're supposed to be? Because generally speaking, from what I understand from statistics, that most people, according to whatever degree they have from school, that's not the work they're doing. Right? Unless it's specific. They, you know, they went to medical school, then generally they're a doctor, engineering, they went to that. Or they did some trade thing, they learned car mechanics, so they're doing that. But for most everybody else, you know, that we would call the general educated public, right? Because generally when we talk about that, it doesn't necessarily include, you know, doctors, engineers, and like this. You know, it's specialized. We talk about the person who just went to school and, you know, exposed himself to, you know, knowledge. And then having come out of that, you know, having, you know, and at least supposedly enriched himself. You know, now he's trying to find some place to fit in. So there won't be a satisfaction there because the knowledge that they've learned was only to, you know, create the person. Then after doing that, then the medieval concept was then you specialize in an occupation. So the Bachelor of Arts was not considered an occupation. It was just considered what was necessary to, you know, make yourself a cultured human being. You know, you knew language properly, you knew, you know, how logic, you know, so how to think and present. You knew rhetoric, so you knew how to present it like that. And you knew the various ways mathematics is applied in your life, you know, in the astronomy, math, astronomy, music, and I think and astrology, like this. You knew how that went. Then it's kind of like, you know, you're complete, like that. Is that what I said? Yeah. Then you went on to study something that you would do as an occupation, which would be either doctor, law, or theology. So then the difficulty is if nowadays is the Bachelor of Arts is considered you know, kind of like a terminal degree for most people. You know, so they end their education there. Right? And instead of that, because before the medieval concept was terminal degree was you know, the master's or a doctor, you know, in these practical fields. So therefore, most people are, just by popular practice, then they consider that that's educated. When it's educated as a person, but not educated in an occupation. So naturally, then they can never be satisfied because they never learned an occupation. Is that make sense? Yeah. So then, even though the whole discussion in going to school was to get an occupation, but they never get to the actual studies of an occupation. You know, so it's actually quite amusing. And then the fun part is the medieval is considered old, archaic, and not very developed. But they were smart enough to know is that you enriched yourself as a person and then you had an occupation. So there's a concept of varna and ashram. You know, ashram was your lifestyle. So that was, you know, put emphasis on first. When you're situated in your lifestyle, then you learn an occupation. Now, while the modern person talks about occupation, but actually all they're doing is studying things that were supposed to enrich them. But because they don't look at it from that perspective, they don't get enriched. You know what I'm saying? You deal with lifestyle elements, but look at it from occupational, but it's not actually practically occupational. Then it's a very interesting mix. And somehow or another, that complicated, that very sophisticated impracticalness is considered superior than the very simple, straightforward medieval concept. You know, like that. So like that. Then devotees is basically, it's just a matter of understanding. So they have faith in Krishna, they have faith in the process, the holy name. Faith, generally speaking, is faith in the spiritual master. But due to not having an understanding of culture, or being even technically exposed to it, you know, I mean, one that would call, you know, human or improved. You know, I'm sorry, you know, you're on the street, and so, yeah, you know, rap songs, you know how to jive, you know how to get down and dance, and when the guy comes, you know how to do all the different things and all that, you know, stuff like that, to say hello, you know, like that. So, and, you know, and probably also is that, you know, if he's close enough, you could probably blow the guy's head off, you know. So, you know, you're pretty good. You know enough math that, you know, you gave him the little packet, a white little packet, and he gave you this many dollars, right? You know, so, you know, you have all the basics, you know. So, but unfortunately, most people aren't actually exposed to what previously would even be called by the Western standard culture. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So they don't have that, and so the idea of varnashram just seems just overwhelmingly restrictive. Right? Because here's now suddenly everything in your life there's a rule about. You know? But the rule is simply there to make sure it stays within that genre. Right? So human is a genre. Right, you know. Then you have varieties of animals. So they're used because the animal doesn't have to be, you know, specifically trained. One or two things, you know. Okay, how to catch it, how to kill it, like that, or you know, how to sniff it out, you know, and you know which ones are poisonous and which ones are not. But other than that, there's very minimal training, very minimal, and that even you only see a few animals actually train. You know, most of them they just kind of grow up. You know, there's not. I don't think there's a lot of training goes into being a dog or something like that, you know, like that. But I think in being a tiger, then there's a little bit of training on catching and stuff like that. So then, the weakness is that we've grown up as animals, and so the taking up human life actually seems very daunting. You know, something very great and foreboding that all these rules we have to follow and everything like that. But it's just to ensure that you stay within that particular species. You know, just like if you wanted to do cooking, and you say, we want to do, okay, you know, continental cooking. And so then I get out my roasted sesame oil. And then I'll say, no, 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 that's Oriental. You have to use this oil for that. You can use olive oil or some other oil like that. Does that make sense? You know, or, you know, I go to make, you know, English mashed potatoes, and I'm getting out my chilies, and I'll go, no, no, that's Indian or Mexican. You know what I'm saying? So there's certain things that it keeps it within that line. And so one can say, oh, this is so restrictive. It's only the restriction is just it stays within the line. Everything has a restriction. It's just if we're comfortable with it, we don't notice the restriction. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because the kid has to go through be restricted anyway, because they're untrained or unsophisticated animal. And so then they have to learn to become sophisticated animal. Right? So, you know, they're taught, you know, to wash their hands after going to the toilet. But that's, of course, a more recent thing. I think they started introducing that into the schools in the 60s. Like that. Before that, nobody talked about it. You learned it at home. And then they found out most people didn't learn it at home. So then they started introducing it at the school. Like that. So, you know, all these different things, you know, it's like, you know, don't put your elbows on the table and all these different things that were before taught. I don't even know if that even matters these days. But, you know, so all these different elements. But we just take it as normal, and that's how we live, so we don't think otherwise. But we were trained in it, and there are restrictions. And because of that, then you can sit down at a table with someone else and expect that you're going to get through the meal without, you know, getting sick. Because the guy does chew with his mouth closed and, you know, stuff like that, and doesn't reach across the table and grab something or take something off your plate because he likes it, like that. I once sat down, I was at a meal. It was really interesting. You might go to somebody's house, you know, it's a low table, you know, nice arrangements, really nice arrangements, nice prasadam. But they had, the kid was very, had this small kid, and he was quite, how you say, I think it would be congenial or maybe, but very forward and very interactive, but very pleasant, really nice. Like that, but he'd get into things. So he'd be eating, we see something on your plate that he'd like, he'd just go, wow, and just reach over. You know, like that, you know? So, you know, he didn't, it wasn't badly meant. It was, you know, very innocent. So you'd be, okay. You know, while he's standing on one side and you're looking at him, then they had a pet mongoose. And while you're looking this way, it would take advantage to come up and take something off your plate from this side. Then the kid would take something. So it was kind of wild, you know. It was very interesting, you know, pleasantly wild, but it was kind of, yeah. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, there's a standard culture that one expects, and people of that culture, they sit together. And if they are a little uncultured, they don't want to sit with someone who is. You know, it's because it's kind of like, you know, all the sticks in and, you know, all these different things. You know, they want to be able to talk with their mouth open and bits falling out and everything, and nobody gets upset like that. And, you know, it's so the idea is that this is human culture. And the only reason that it doesn't seem practical is because we don't see through human perspective. Because practical means practical is, you can look at, well, is there practical for what gets something done immediately or something gets done long term, right? Like this. So the thing is God's worked things out that it works now and it works later. Right? But because you're working on a higher platform, sometimes things take a little longer. Right? Does that make sense? You know, to boil, like we said, you know, to boil Maggie noodles takes 2 minutes, at least according to their advertisement, it should, you know, but generally it takes something different than that, you know, but whatever it is. You know, you're not going to say, Maggie, 2 3/4 minutes, you know, like that. So you'd say, well, you know, it's not. So that's there, but then if you want to cook a full meal, it'll take a touch longer. Right? So it's just a matter of what you want. So you could say, oh, it's so restrictive having to cook a full meal and everything like that. Well, we can just, boil the water, throw it in, and then while I'm putting down the plate, it's ready, and dump it out on the plate, and hurry, bow. Why all this fancy, all this restrictive elements? I just want to eat, I'm just doing practical stuff, I want to do service to Krishna. So you could say all that, but the point is the result is different. So that's the idea, is it's basically due to a lack of understanding, like that. And that's because of the conditioning. Does that make sense? So you have the opposite. Much of the time, the Hindus, they follow things, but they're following only the rule. They don't know what it's for, but they have enough piety that they can relate to doing duties and being guided by higher authority, but they don't know its purpose, right? So they don't know the philosophy. So then there's a weakness there. So then all varieties of Shastric, recommendations they follow, and it's kind of a kitchery, because it's not consistent, because there's no philosophy. So then you get these two weaknesses: one is philosophy and no religion; one is religion, no philosophy. So therefore, Hindus are sentimental or fanatic, and the devotees are speculative. Does that make sense? So the Vedic concept is you have both philosophy and religion, because religion is only the practical application of philosophy. So that's the fun part, is that one doesn't follow the practical application because one is being practical. Right? But the practical means using a modern approach. So now look at it over the last, so much time, as devotees are exposed and they could know more about it. So, okay, 70s, you could say, there wasn't so much knowledge, though they could have, because the geek books were there and probably did request them to read them. But by 80s, there was, more discussion about these things and all that, and trying to establish and everything. So you could say from there, so basically you could say that it's 30 years of exposure to it. But devotees are always being practical. And they're getting that immediate result. They got the money, they built the temple, they installed the deities, they had the festival. But at the same time, there is no community. You know what I'm saying? A few individuals who understand the principle make their own friends. But it's not organized by the authority. It's just they know how to be friends with people, and they have a few friends, and they hang out. But it's not organized on a bigger scale. Why? Because we're always saying that the practical is this, but we do that, but we don't understand that 6 months down the line, it's not going to work. Or a few years down the line, it's not going to work. We're being practical now, and we're just getting into sadhana, and sadhana's higher and all this and that, so the guy's not interacting with the family properly. But he's getting the practical stuff done, and he's doing all that. And it's going great until 3 years later, when his wife says, hands him the divorce papers and says, sign here. like that. So then you could say, like that. And so then, say, so the point is, the Vedic is how to work it out. That doesn't happen. The wife doesn't leave, the husband doesn't leave, the kids don't leave. The parents pay attention. All these different things. It's all meant that it works long term rather than short term. So that means sometimes you have to go out of your way. Yes, it would be so much easier to just do your work up to the last second, then get in the car and drive, and then, do this and that, and then come home. But no, you need to call in between and say this or that. And you could say, no, but that's taking an extra 30 seconds or 1 minute. I would be home 1 minute earlier. But the difference is whether you're coming home to something pleasant or you're coming home to Methuselah. Like that. So that's the difference. So one could say, no, but it's so much more practical like this. But no, that's not. It's more practical to take more time and make the phone call. Like that. This is the point, that we are so practical that it doesn't work. Right? It's totally prayas. There's no shreyas. It works at this moment, but it doesn't work at the next moment. Because it's not considering the nature of something. Right? We're only considering, the practical of getting home. We're not considering why we're going home. We're going home to interact with the family. So that means practical means including the family in the equation. Does that make sense? And since we don't, then it doesn't work. And then we say, but it was being practical. Yeah, practical on one level, but not practical on the sphere that you're dealing with. So when it comes to money, getting it done, collecting it, most of the time, not necessarily spending it, but collecting it, you know, some administrative things like that, managing some time, then generally we're, you know, we do quite good at it. But when it comes to people, managing people, interacting with people, having relationships with people, maintaining relationships with people, then you could basically say the Western culture, as it stands today, is an absolute total failure. Right? If you go back in time, then there was something more. It means there was a strong polarity. You know what I'm saying? The way administration might deal, or different things like the common would deal with these, especially with authority, was the problem. But there was generally more family and friends, and these things were more of a value. You know, like there's an Italian saying: if you found a friend, you found a treasure. Like that, you know. So you don't hear that stuff, you know. How you say? Person from the non-Latin Western first world culture would probably think that. Individuals might, if there's some remnants left in their particular, but it's not a general principle. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, the Westerner says, you know, he's your friend, he's not my friend, and if I like him, maybe friend. You know, but like for the Latins, is if he's your friend, because you're my friend, he's automatically my friend. You know what I'm saying? It's just a different thing. So if you go back, these were more standard things. So, but the modern doesn't have any concept of that. And because of that, then Varnashram doesn't make sense. Because it's based totally on relationships. But what they don't catch is the relationships with things. It means if you can understand relationships with people, relationship with things is super easy. But they focus on relationship with things and have no idea how to convert that into working with people. It's very easy to convert people into things, but not things into people. Like that. So they'll feel themselves very advanced, but guaranteed the people who those individuals or those groups of individuals, communities even, I'll go as far as to say, that understand more relationships with people are much better at the things. That's why slowly, slowly, that first world, you know, market is being taken over by people from communities that understand people, you know, and then they apply that into things. You know what I'm saying? I thought it was hilarious. I heard, you know, some years back that in Los Angeles, you know, which has always been you could say a white man's stronghold, like that, is that in some areas of Los Angeles there, then you can start a club that you're actually just a white American. So you can have a white American club. You know, before it was, everybody was white. You might have a Mexican club or, you know, an Italian club or a Chinese club, you know, like that to get together and, you know, somehow or another work on the platform, your culture, you know, talk your language or study your history or eat your food. Now you can do that with the white boys because there's so few of them that you can, they can officially start a club. They're a minority in the school, right, you know. It's funny, you know. It's quite humorous in that way, you know. So the difficulty comes is that the dynamism to do something is very great, and that's very good. That's one element that one has to appreciate the first world for, is their commitment to making things in the world better. The problem is they don't have an idea what's better or actually how to do it. But they're very committed to it. You know, so one has to appreciate that. So taking that and applying it would be very good. But the problem is because of the idea that we are who we are because we're free, then that means that there's no opportunity for establishing culture. Right? Because the very idea of it is kind of like against their being, because this, you know, because they'll lose their identity if they accept it. Right? But what is not understood is that freedom is always there in the advanced stages of understanding the rules. Right? That's spontaneity. Someone who knows the rules and is able to be free within that framework, then that's inspiring. That's leadership. That's spontaneous. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So it's just my devotees appreciate what it is. Then in spending all the time arguing whether we should follow it or not, you know, it's a matter of them. They could spend the same amount of energy and learn how it works. You know what I'm saying? For the amount of discussion on it, and that all that we've come to the conclusion is we're not sure what the conclusion is. 30 years of discussion on this is what we're supposed to do, and how to apply it, how much of it is applied, what's the mood of applying it, how will we apply it in all these various situations we're in. Devotees of 30 years should be quite expert at it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're good at philosophy, so why wouldn't they be good at this? Because one could say, well, where's the opportunity? Practically speaking, every purport discusses it. Unless it's like, you know, just straight Vedanta, like the Kumaras are talking. But at one point, they'll make it practical. And so there is no point where Varnashram generally is not being discussed. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of opportunity. And then what you hear in the class, then you try to practice it. Is that okay? Okay. So the point being is that whatever one's nature is, that's not the consideration. On the material platform, of course, it's a consideration because you're doing a particular material activity that requires a particular skill and mentality. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you're not going to ask the, you know, how you say, the philharmonic first chair violinist to, you know, fix your car like that, you know, unless that's what he does for a hobby, right? You know, but so the point is someone, they have their nature, but that nature has been already defined by God, and the occupation that goes with that nature has already been defined. So it's not a matter, it's not rocket science here. It's just a matter of, you know, A goes with A, B with B, C with C, like that. It's very, very simple. Then what's being pointed out, because it's given by God, that means it can be engaged in the Lord's service. If it wasn't given by God, then how would you engage it in the Lord's service? Does that make sense? You know, so how he's defined it, you can use it for the Lord. So it works very, very nicely. And the point that's very important is that it doesn't matter what the occupation is, every man, by whatever his occupation is, can perfect his life, you know, become God conscious, go back to Godhead. Right? That'll make the difference between our view in dealing with Varnashram and a materialist. The materialist will have a different, no, according to, you know, what your birth is means according to your conditioning. Then, you know, there's that higher and lower will means that you can be involved in something or not. That the higher could be involved in that, the lower couldn't. No, the higher naturally takes up piety easier, the lower not as easily. But as far as spiritual, that's the soul. So it doesn't have any actually bearing on it at all. Like that. It's simply desire and faith. Right? Does that make sense? But because of that, because it's so broad, then we had the thing before, is that somebody may be following, but they might not be. You know, they've fixed in Krishna consciousness, but they're still in impiety. Right? They can't see the importance of being so fanatic about cleanliness. That's impious. Right? You know, they don't see why I have to, you know, wash my feet every time I go in the bathroom. You know, what's the big deal? You know, there's a nice rug on the floor. Right, you know, when I used the toilet, I didn't pee on my foot. So, I mean, why do I have to wash it? You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, I mean, the wife might have a different opinion. But, you know, does that make sense? You know, like that. So, the that's an impiety. So it's uncultured, right? But when we hear impiety, for us, from our background, we won't take that as an impiety. We'll take it. Impiety means, you know, meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. right? So that's why we're giving examples there. You know, and then it becomes more of a thing because then the whole morality thing comes in. But in actuality, that may be there. But more common than not, it will be is that the impiety is that he doesn't deal with his family properly. He doesn't deal at work properly. He doesn't respect his boss. Right? Or he's a boss, he doesn't respect the people there. Or he doesn't respect his money. He spends it, you know, whimsically. These are all sinful. You know what I'm saying? Though maybe acknowledged and accepted as part of life in the modern cultures, but it's not as far as God's laws go. Right? You deal whimsically with money, then you'll lose the money. In the future, you won't have money. You deal respectfully with the money, then you'll always have money. Right? Does that make sense? So these kind of elements, you know, there's so much pride in that, what they're doing, that's sinful. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's just a matter of how close you bring the point. Is that the person's in a sinful position, so you're encouraging him, so you're focusing on the piety that he's performing. You know, he's engaged in devotional activities. So you're not focusing on the impiety that's his natural lifestyle. Right? So therefore, then we let it go. But if we tighten it, no, all that's all nonsense. Right? And then, does that make sense? So that makes it, you know, makes it very clear. So therefore, the devotees are still all saintly. You know, but for some, means this won't mean much to us, but for some Hindus, they can't relate to what we do at all. Means things like an artik, yes, and those things like that. But, you know, how we dress, the lifestyle, and all, they'll just say, what is this? They can't relate to it. So in their mind, we're impious. And according to the law, it's true. But they'll think, therefore you can't be saintly. No, but the devotees are saintly because their commitment is to chanting the holy name. So in the same way as we drop that into what those who are sinful by nature would consider sinful. So just as the Hindus can't handle not following Varnashram, those who don't follow Varnashram can't handle stuff that they would can't, you know what I'm saying? So the ones, then they're all bent out of shape about religiosity, so they're religionists. And then the ones who are sinful by nature, they can't be religionists because they don't follow religion. So then they're moralists. But it's the same principle. So just as we get bent out of shape that, no, but how can, you know, he's in a fallen state, how can he be a devotee? The Hindus think the same thing about us. Does that make sense? It's the same principle. We'll say, no, that's nonsense. You chant Hare Krishna, you're about... So he's chanting Hare Krishna too. No, but he's immoral. No. You know, and they're saying, no, but he's irreligious. Right? And religion's higher than morality. So who's right there? Right? And even that, the moral standing, is it actually wrong morally? It may be, it may not be. Because where's the definition of morality coming from? It's not coming from God. We're not basing it on scripture. We're not even basing it on a religion. You know, we're not going to say, well, the Old Testament says this, or the Quran, or the Old Testament says that. We're not saying that. We're just saying is, you know, in modern culture, everybody knows you don't do this. So who's this everybody? You, your mommy who told you, and one or two friends you bumped into that you happened to mention. That's it. That's the everybody. There is. It's not bigger than that. You know? No, it's like that. Go look on the internet. Yeah, like that. And then and you look on the internet and like that. And there's, you know, 12 comments. See, everybody. Okay, I've expanded it from 4 now to, you know, added another 16. You know, now I'm really convinced that not only is it everybody, meaning, you know, everybody I know in my community, and, you know, I'm American, so it means the whole of America, but now it's international. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So this is the difficulty, is that we are unable to appreciate that when Krishna says, If the point is that it's the devotional service, and the devotional service means the attitude of desiring to please Krishna, and the others are secondary, that means that everything else is secondary. Not that everything else is secondary except morality, that becomes primary. Or everything else is secondary except religion, that becomes, you know, and then there's the Mayavadis. You know, they'll consider we're doing all kinds of stuff that's not renunciation, so we'll never come to the platform of liberation. Right? And those guys into sense gratification, they really know these guys wouldn't have a clue how to enjoy themselves. You know what I'm saying? So anybody who's committed to Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha would have a problem with the devotees. Right? Because they'll consider they're not up to the standard in that area. Right? Because devotional service is prominent. So all those things are secondary anyway. So we should be very careful to not make something that's secondary primary. You know, otherwise then we'll make the same mistake that those others who follow the Vedic culture will make in considering us. Right? Because we only consider it as a problem, it's morally improper, if it's against first world concept of morality. If it's second world or third world morality, we're not interested. You know what I'm saying? The first cousins are you know, getting too intimate, you know, so the Italian guy tells them, hey, this is, you know, either you, this stops or, you know, something serious is going to happen. You know, but the first one, oh, why are you so like that? No, but they have their, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's a problem. Is that the definition is basically just first world. And if it's something else, it'll work in that community, but you can't, you know, make it international because no one would buy it. Do we understand? So there's a very serious bias here. And that bias comes from the conditioning. That's all. Like that. So it's natural. It'll be there. Conditioning means you're conditioned to that. So only by practice, knowledge and practice, it will go away. You know, you can adjust it or purify it, engage it. Does that make sense? But unless we're aware of it, how do we know how to work with it? So that's the idea of this, is that to become aware of that. Right? Does that make sense? So the concept of religion, morality, you know, sense gratification, liberty, these are all bona fide elements. But they're only bona fide because God's given them. And God's given everybody duties within this. Right? What's the natural? Right? Right? You know, everybody's following their nature, right? From following their nature, they're getting the profit of their particular nature. Right? And then they enjoy the results of that nature. But the proper performance of that duty is in relationship with the Lord. It's naishkarmi, so you're getting liberated. At the same time, because you're doing it to please the Lord, you're getting devotion. So all five are being accomplished through proper devotional service. Right? But but of this, you know, the direct activities like chanting and that are more important. So if one very nicely chants but doesn't engage anything else, he will still advance. But at some point, he has to address these things, either by taking them and engaging them, or because he can't engage them or refuses to engage them, when Krishna takes them away, then by that advancement from chanting, that he's able to understand, okay, there's nothing in the material world, and so he moves on. But if he's attached to that, then you have to be able to engage it. So it's one or the other. Either engage it or lose it. You know? Like that. But there's no such thing as not losing it and engaging it whimsically. Not at least as time goes on. In the beginning, yes, but as time goes, no. Does that make sense? Okay. 1847. It's better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. One's occupational duty is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita, as already discussed in previous verses. It doesn't say some people's occupational duty is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita. It says one's occupation. That means everybody's. Like that. As already discussed in previous verses, the duties of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra are prescribed according to the particular modes of nature. One should not imitate another's duty. A man who is by nature attracted to one kind of work done by Shudras should not artificially claim to be a Brahmana, although he may have been born into a Brahmin family. In this way, one should work according to his own nature. No work is abominable if performed in the service of the Lord. So it's not abominable if it's performed for the Lord. If it's not performed for the Lord, then there is a material hierarchy of what's better and not. You know what I'm saying? So the Brahminical work will be better than the Shudra work. But if it's done for the Lord, it doesn't matter. From both of them, you will go back to Godhead. Right? So here we have an interesting element that whatever the family you're born in, they may have a nature, but if your nature is different, don't artificially do what's the nature of that family. Like here, so you're born in a Brahmin family, but you're attracted by the work of the Shudra, so don't artificially do the Brahminical work, do the Shudra work. Right? But you have to also, of course, define the difference between what's occupation and what's hobby. Right? Hobby, one could be in any area. Yes.
You said that they will both go back to Godhead, his Brahmana and his Shudra.
Right.
The active Brahmana is got amazing sadhana and giving classes and bringing people to Krishna consciousness and so on like that.
But you've described just ashram. That the Shudra could also do. Means the one is, let's say, doing yajnas, for the devotees, and the other one is fixing shoes. But as far as knowing the philosophy, discussing, and that's the same. It's the difference between varna and ashram. You know what I'm saying? Means the Brahminical varna is ashram activities. But that's his occupation. The Shudra means his occupation is different from that. They all have the same ashram duties. But the Varna duties, that's where it's different. For a Brahmin, it's not. But for Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, it is. Does that make sense? So when Prabhupada established Brahmacharya Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyasa and Brahminical occupational duties, he has established Varna ashram. Some devotees will say, oh, he didn't establish Varna ashram. No, he did. All he did is didn't add into it the detail of Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra as an occupation. But it's still the same ashram. So that means 5 out of 8 are there. That's more than half. You generally consider that some solid work. Right? Especially if Shudra is just do your work without complaining. Right? That's it.
For that.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not like that's a big deal. The Prabhupada's already mentioned that. So it's not a matter of that. Because you don't learn from, the saintly person how to fix shoes or how to drive a car or how to make donuts or, stuff like that. You learn from someone who knows that. The Vaishya is also mentioned. Kshatriya, that's more of a thing. But the Kshatriya training is like the Brahminical. You know what I'm saying?
So, according to one's conditioning, for one to act according to one's duties, is the same challenge for everybody?
It's the same challenge.
Like the Shudra to do his work without complaining, it's the same as the...
Yeah, okay. Because the Brahmin is, it means he has to go do all these different things, and it's just whatever you provide. I've gone to, remember this one is in Bombay, you have this, the main road, there's Marine Drive. It's right on the ocean. Mm-hmm. So everything... on there, they're all big buildings. Everybody there is, rich to the point of, the olfactory element is quite strong, right? Right. So then they're at one of those houses, and they have an apartment. The apartment is like the whole floor of the apartment building. And they have 2 floors. They have an internal stair. Right? So they're rich. So you go and you do a program for them, do a yajna and all that. And they give you 2,000 rupees. Does that make sense? You get 2,000 rupees for that from a devotee who doesn't have any money. Because it's like, oh, yeah, the little Brahmins and that. They have to do all these different things. But, making money, that's the real thing. So that takes tolerance. Right? And the guy doing the shoes, then the guy treats you like dirt, so you have to be tolerant. You know what I'm saying? So everybody has their thing that has to be tolerant. The Kshatriya is there, he's in his court, one of the citizens comes and blames him for things not going properly. Right? But it's not going properly for him. So ultimately it is the responsibility of the king. He can't get upset with it. You know, he has to hear it out. And then if the person's right, then work on it and correct it. If he's wrong, you know, it's just his perception that he's making trouble, then he should be punished for that. So that takes tolerance. You know, the Vaishya has to sit there and, you know, be so nice to everybody, though they hate them, as long as they make their profit. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has to be tolerant. So like that, you take any quality, everybody has to have it. You know what I'm saying? The difference being is the Brahmin, you need the quality, then you can do the service. But the other ones, by doing the service, then you develop the quality. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Taking sannyas is specifically for Brahmanas?
Means it's natural for Brahmanas. Others, if they're qualified, may do it. Means, in other words, if you come to the Brahminical platform, either by, it means, you know, on the ashram platform, then one can take sannyas. So because the Brahmin is always, means all he ever does is the Brahminical platform, so therefore it's very natural for them. So if you have someone on the other varnas, if they're on that Brahminical platform by ashram, right, by due to their either, you know, extremely pious nature, but most likely from their devotional activities, then that would be natural for them. But it means that, you know, studying and speaking is the prominent element. Does that make sense? You know, lack of need of something, you know, having certain, you know, facilities, you know, so you can call it your house, and you can do it what you like, and, you know, does that make sense? Those kind of things. So then if one can do that, then it doesn't matter. But otherwise, technically, you'll generally see those who are Brahminical by conditioning, it'll be more natural, easier. Like that. But it's not that anyone else can't do it. You know what I'm saying? So if you're dealing with materialists, you know, just pious persons, but not non-devotees, then generally, Brahmins take sannyas and nobody else does. Right? You know, Kshatriyas will take vanapras. You know, Vaishyas would be retired, but they would just be sitting over in the corner, right? You know, so they've got their Bhagavad Gita open, they're chanting, but when the son is making the deal, he's got his eye on him. You know, just how well he's doing. If he did well, then he's happy and he goes back to reading. And if not, he calls them over and says, "You should know." Like that. You know, so you see it all. I don't know if you see it now, but you go into all these shops, and the son's sitting there, and all, you know, dressed up. The father over in the corner, he's got his little Gita and he's got his japa beads and the little old pictures there, but he can see everything. He's not in the corner where he can't see the deal, right? You know, so, like that. And Shudras, and they're always grihasthas. You know, even when they're unmarried, they're grihasthas. They're just unmarried grihasthas. So the concept of bachelor is actually a Shudra thing. It's not for Brahma Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Because they're students, they're brahmacharis, then they get married. But Shudras are never not in that environment. You know, the considerations are always grihastha considerations. So then that makes it more difficult. Therefore, we find that the lack of appreciation of the brahmachari ashram. Like that. Yes?
Brahman initiation, then.
No, but for us, Brahman initiation is your pancharatrik. So pancharatrik, if you have the qualifications, then anybody can take it. And by that process, the body is changed. You know, so then technically, then one is no longer a Shudra. But one wouldn't have come to the point of taking that if he didn't, by the ashram element, qualify. You know what I'm saying? So he had that faith, he had that commitment, he had that regularity. But that's coming from the spiritual platform, not from his conditioning. So it's not the Shudra who took second initiation. It's the Brahminical consciousness of the soul who accepted. Does that make sense? So that's why we have to be able to deal with these few things that happen at once. They seem contradictory, but they're not. Because they're happening on different levels. But because God's arranged it, they can all happen simultaneously. If we arrange it, it won't happen simultaneously. Right? That's also another point that's being made about why there has to be one God and not many gods. Because if there were many gods, the universe wouldn't run so smoothly and so consistently. It'd always be, you know, today it's the weather's like this, and then somebody else gets in charge, and then it changes. You know, the sun comes up over there. You know, just goes around. It's a corkscrew. You know, starts out and goes bigger and bigger until it goes kind of. You know, they'll change it. So that's the thing. No, it all happens in one way that's consistent. You can establish laws. That means there's one person, you know, has created it.
No? Mine was Varnasham. Always like this. I thought it was more like a long-term thing. We follow and move up. Next slide, move up. Like that.
That's the slow path.
Yeah. And now
no, it's just because of the devotional service. By devotion, one develops all good qualities, right? So all the qualities that are required are developed through the process of chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, in one lifetime, one can expand the whole thing. But if not, then the Shudra does his job. He does it really well. He's committed. Then he moves up. He becomes the Vaishya. From that, the Kshatriya. To that, the Brahmin. Then from there, moves up from just being, not necessarily so educated to more educated, the ritualistic, then to understanding the principles, you know, up to the philosophy, then understanding transcendence, then understanding the Lord. You know, so it takes a long time. You're talking thousands, of lifetimes. I mean, to get to that point, then maybe even longer. But to go through the cycle, otherwise one would get bored. But here, this is the quick path. That's why one has to understand everything at once. If that wasn't the case, then you just pick the nature, focus on that, and then discuss that and not worry about anything else. Is that something?
Yeah, is it too much that a devotee is supposed to understand the principle of dharma, karma, artha, moksha, and to deal properly when he is mature?
It means it's ideal that he should, but as it's said, that even if he doesn't, still because of his faith in the holy name, and serving Krishna, then the process still works. You know what I'm saying? So he may stay very strongly, devotees don't understand this and that, and that's getting in the way. But it's still, the process will still work. But if you commit, offenses to the name, then you have a problem. Because one is not being elevated by practice of other supporting aspects of the Vedic culture. You know, it means cleanliness is not there, necessarily other things are not there. So that's not helping with the situation, establish one in goodness and all that. And then from there, very easily go to goodness. One is not, so it's simply by one's commitment to the holy name that one is advancing. Right? And so, therefore, if one sticks to that and all, then slowly, slowly he'll move to the position of basically bypassing the whole system and just move to the Paramahamsa stage. But that means he also has to give up whatever his attachments are. It's like means if you're giving up the Vedic rule, then it also in connection with that would be giving up what is your idea of that aspect. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So you're not following the Vedic, let's say, diet, but you also have to give up attachment to your own diet or the Vedic life. So you have to give up attachment to your own lifestyle. So the point is the Vedic lifestyle, it works easier, it creates less social disharmony. And it very naturally is able to be very obviously engaged in the Lord's service. While the Western lifestyles are not as easy to see how to connect it. Right? So, yeah. So the point is you're going through the Vedic lifestyle because it's very efficient for engaging in the Lord's service and for giving up one's attachment, because the point of dealing with it is naishkarmya. So if one is not utilizing it, then one's working with one's own conditioning. But still, the principle of naishkarmya and giving up the attachment to it has to be done. So either that'll be done naturally or by force. You know, it's like you either do it willingly or, you know, Maya has her methods like that. I think you're supposed to say that in the German accent.
We have our methods.
Yes, like that. You know, then it works very well. Right? So the point is one can not be obliged to follow them because one has gone beyond them. But that means one's gone beyond one's conditioning also. It's not that we've gone beyond Varnashram and we stick with the Malecha culture. No, we've gone beyond Varnashram, but we've also gone beyond Malecha culture. Right? Does that make sense? And then the fun part is the liberated soul doesn't mind following the Vedic system like that. So then, you know, at that point he can introduce it into his life. But there won't be much to introduce. You know? Does that make sense? Only if he's setting an example for others, then that part will be introduced. But on his own, he may not worry about it. You know, because he's always just chanting, so there's no... Does that make sense? So the process can work. That's why we see devotees who don't necessarily follow it nicely perfecting their life. Because the process is so powerful. But these are all tools to help. So it would just like, let us say, you know, we've always grown up, you know, cooking, you know, our lunch in a, you know, Campbell soup can, right? And so then when somebody comes along and starts talking about, you know, these very nice, you know, how you say, ceramic pots and other things like that and all these things, it's kind of like, you know, why bother? We just throw it in our can. It works. You know, why do we have to go with all these other things? You know, the can, you know, you keep it nice. You don't have the ceramic. You can't drop it. I can drop my can. It still works. And if there's a problem, I just bang it out like that. But the ceramic thing, you drop it, you know, it's finished. So why do I have to get involved in all this? My can works great. So it's just said, yeah, but what you can cook with that can is not necessarily on the same level as what you can cook with the other things. But the point is you can cook just as devotionally, you know, whatever it is that you cook in your can as you can with the other fancy pots. So therefore, he can still, in his occupation, you know, go back to Godhead. That's the point. But the thing is what's being offered. There's a superior system of lifestyle. Right? But the Malecha lifestyle has its advantage because it's so rough and so unfulfilling that it's guaranteed that the Malecha will burn out. It's guaranteed. But the problem is when they burn out, if they'll surrender to Krishna or not. That's no guarantee because there's plenty of Malechas and they're not. So it's not an ideal situation. You know what I'm saying? But it does work. Narad Muni explains it in the seventh canto. He explains the four varnas and all that, explains the women's duties, then he talks about the Malecha duties. You know, like that. So therefore we know when it says they're low birth, you know, and saying women, Vaishyas, Shudras, you know, then there's also lower than that, you know, but it's just not mentioned like that, you know. Does that make sense? So from our perspective, you know, women are shudras is high.
Like that. It's human.
Yeah, it's human. Right. So then he explains the Malecha. The Malecha works on the principle that you put so much ghee on the fire goes out. Right? And so then they become so frustrated that then they're willing to take up, if they have, you know, fortunate to take up Krishna consciousness. So the devotees will follow their lifestyle, become so frustrated that they have to some way give up their false ego and all that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it works. But the thing is you could do so much more. Mm-hmm. Right? So for the individual, they'll advance nicely. Right? Does that make sense? You know, any community that you have, how many of there used to be, you know, gurus, GBCs, sannyasis, temple presidents, other officers like that? Tons of them. What are they doing now? Not necessarily a whole lot. So if they were still doing a whole lot, how much more you could do? But as an individual, they can still advance and go back to Godhead. But because it's a mission, it would be so much nicer if one could follow all these things and cooperate together. Does that make sense? So that's why the system is so perfect. That's why God's system is better. That this, you know, how you say, you know, they'll say, you know, it's a foolproof system, right? And we're the fools. Like, so despite us, it still works. So that's why the emphasis is there. So avoid the 10 offenses of the holy name, it'll work. But if you commit the 10 offenses, then you have a problem. If you don't commit the 10 offenses, then however you're situated, it will work. But it doesn't say it will be smooth. You know what I'm saying? Because if you want to follow the Western lifestyle, it will be rough going through it. The experiences will be intense and will be, you know, not nice. Because if you're dealing with an impious lifestyle, the result of impiety is bad reactions. You know what I'm saying? So it will be rough. You know, socially, economically, and all of them means Dharma Artakama, it will be rough. So Dharma Artakama will not go necessarily nicely. Or one will go nicely, the other ones will fall apart, then that will fall apart, and then, you know, it'll be a roller coaster ride. But devotional service is so powerful, despite that, you can still go back to Godhead. You know what I'm saying? But the point is you have to engage that in the Lord's service. But if you're not fully engaging your nature in the Lord's service, even then, it's not going to work. You'll have to take another birth. The process will eventually work, but if you want to avoid taking birth again, then you have to engage your occupation nicely in Krishna's service. You have to be excellent at that. Yeah.
You can be a Shudra and yet in devotional service, you won't be brought to the mode of goodness platform?
Of course. But that's in ashram. It doesn't mean that your work changes.
Papa
Shudra was the Varna? Shudra's the Varna. But what we're saying is, one comes to the Brahminical platform on the platform of ashram, not Varna. Does that make sense?
No.
What doesn't make sense?
Well, because I thought ashram had to do with, you know, brahmachari, vihasta, vanaprastha, sannyas.
Where's your sadhana in varna ashram?
In all of them. Sadhana is in all of them. Can be, right?
Sadhana is in making your shoes. You chant your japa. You get up in the morning, you take your bath, you go to the temple, you chant Gayatri, you study the books. Where is that? Varna or ashram?
I have a question. It's above it, right?
No, it's part of ashram. Because the brahmachari training means you're trained in, you know, cleanliness, respect of authority, a study of shastra, performance of duties, like that, control of the senses. And so that's the foundation for being a good grihastha vanaprastha sannyasi. You understand? So the devotee who is a shudra by occupation, he will advance in the ashram element to the platform of being a rightly situated Brahmin. But it doesn't mean that his occupation will change. Why would it change? Because now he's great at chanting his japa, he's always absorbed in the Lord, then he wouldn't still be fixing shoes? Why wouldn't he? You think now he'll be a big businessman, or he'll be a kshatriya?
Papa Brahmin doing fire sacrifices and things. Yeah, like...
No, but what is doing fire sacrifices going to have to do with your being absorbed in Krishna consciousness? Fire sacrifice is a qualification that you have by the particular modes, that's what you do as work.
So I'm thinking...
You know what I'm saying? Because you can be a yogic Brahman and not be Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? So it's a skill. But sadhana doesn't work good if you're not Krishna conscious.
So you
So you know what I'm saying? So
on the qualities of the mode of goodness, but yet still you're very much happy in your conditioning of, say, making sure.
Not your conditioning. It means that's your ability. It means your body can do that.
But then if you're going to study and do sadhana and get better and better, then...
What's it got to do with your ability to figure out newer and newer ways to make shoes work? You know what I'm saying? Or how to make a shoe.
I'm thinking you would move your focus.
That is at one point, but when you have to make money for your family, are you going to move your focus? You know, why? Because it's just another occupation. What's the meaning?
So I'm thinking also Shudra has to do with a mentality also. Shudra is somebody who just likes to sweep the floor and get paid and go home. He doesn't want to...
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. How many devotees actually are willing to just depend upon the Lord and do a sacrifice whenever it comes along, if it comes along, and accept only how much money the person gives and then live off of that?
Right, and that's
wrong. Knock me out.
That's wrong, right?
Yeah, those people like maybe on one hand. You know, and you might have lost a few fingers. You understand? Who as an occupation? It's just like who in the movement, even they take book distribution, they do that simply as an occupation. They distribute books, whatever they get, they give their money to BBT, they keep their one quarter, and that's it. How many are there? Also a handful. You know what I'm saying? Means you can list the names. It's not like there's so many. It's like once you've heard them, you can remember them. You know what I'm saying? So the point is who's doing it? Who's a full-time pujari, and that's what they do, and whatever the temple gives them, that's all that they use to maintain their family. How many are there? How many, you know, they cook all, you know, for the temple, and that's all they do, is they do that kind of thing, and whatever the temple gives them, that's all. Very few.
But we're saying that we have to come to the mode of goodness. We have to.
And the point is now, are all those devotees who are not doing that, are they advancing? Are they advancing? All the devotees who are coming to the temple, they're not the full-time pujari, they're not the full-time book distributor, mm-hmm. like that. You know, they're not the full-time preacher, they're not the full-time priest. You know, like that. So, are they advancing in devotional service?
Well, I would say yes.
Yeah, so I'm saying, well, I'm talking about not in theory here, I'm talking practical. You have a community. Are they advancing? Okay, so the point is, but they're advancing, are they changing their occupation? No, because you don't need to. Occupation is how you make money. Ashram is your spiritual platform. Varna is social. Ashram, spiritual.
I guess I'm equating what mode you're...
What we're equating is shudras are low class, disgusting, you know, they somehow get on the bottom of your feet and you always got to, like, scrape them off. Like that. You know? That's the standard Western concept. And so, therefore, you couldn't be a shudra and be a devotee. But Krishna's making the point is, no, you have a conditioned nature, and no matter what it is, it's not the soul. So it's all mundane.
I'm thinking your conditioned nature is defined by the mode that you are operating in.
No, but what mode is chanting japa?
Transcendental.
Right, okay. What mode is studying Bhagavatam?
Mode of goodness. Transcendental.
Okay. What mode is worshipping the deity? Right. Okay. So what has that got to do with the material modes that govern the occupation?
But then we're told we have to come to the mode of goodness. We have to come to
the... Yeah, but that's the mode of goodness. That's in your ashram. It's in your mentality. You'll take your mentality with you to the occupation. But it's not what makes the occupation work, right? Just like this. You can be a fabulous actor and be one of the most disgusting people on the planet. And they'll pay you millions. Right? Or you could be a really nice person and they'd still pay you millions, but as long as you can act. You know what I'm saying? So it's Can you do the work? Is what's there, not what mode you're in. They don't care.
Right.
Yes.
Is the mode of Bhagavad Shudra one who turns up on time, gradually does his GP?
Yeah, you'd say like that. It means he would be able to do things. In other words, a Shudra would be a good Shudra because Krishna said that's how a Shudra should act. Right? So he's doing it because it's devotional service. But because he has the motor skills and what he can think about and what his intelligence works in, is doing that Shudra activity. The point is it's a machine. Just like, okay, let us say we have a car, okay? And it's a particular brand, you know? And so we're not using it for Krishna, right? You know, we have our Mustang, we've souped it up, we've gotten a few accessories and made it look really good, like that. Now we become a devotee. And so now we use the same car to drive the devotees around and go out on Sankirtan. So now it changes into a different car, right? Does it? Before you looked at it and you went, wow, it's a custom Mustang. And now we look at it and go, wow, it's turned into a Bentley. Bentley? A Rolls? Would that work better for you? It didn't. Okay. We understand? But the consciousness has changed, so the work doesn't change. Do you understand? So devotees are advancing, and still you don't have any more full-time pujaris. Why? Because they don't have the conditioned nature to do that. But everybody can do some puja. But they do it as part of their sadhana, not as an occupation. You know, or somebody can give a class as part of sadhana, but not as an occupation. You know what I'm saying? Anybody can give a Bhagavatam class as a devotee and is practicing. But to make it their duty to, let's say, give classes and seminars as an occupation, that only a handful of devotees are doing. Do you understand? Does that make sense? So like that is, it's a matter of what you can do. So it's just like the guy can't do business before being a devotee. Now being a devotee, can he do business? No, he still can't do business. And the guy could do business before. Now he's a devotee. Can he do business? Yes. So it's just the conditioning. The mind is a material element. What kind of mind is it? What kind of intelligence? What kind of senses? So the combination of those three defines nature, and that defines what occupation goes with that nature. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you take this, we were discussing, he's joking, that Christian Louboutin, right? Now, he makes shoes. So technically, he is he's a cobbler, right? But when you bring up the name, it circles it, no, it's the top shoe on the planet. You know, and anybody who's rich and famous they have those shoes. So if you talk to them about, he's a nice shoe. No, it's beyond shoemaking. You know, it's couture, right? You know, like that. But he's just a very, very high end, sophisticated cobbler. Louis Vuitton. He's just a very sophisticated bag maker. So there's shudras. Do you understand? But very high-end shudra. They're on, the level of, the shudras that the king would keep around. Do you understand? And then there's the guy sitting on the corner and all that, you might go and fix your shoe with him or might not. You prefer the guy on the other side of the street because this guy's a little too weird. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's so, but it's still a shudra. You know what I'm saying? Because they have the guy, but who runs the company? Not him. He only sees what's the design. But when it comes to the accounts, he's got a manager. Because he's a Shudra. So does that make sense?
I was working in misunderstanding as far as the modes.
The modes are there. They affect, just like, let's say you take a knife and you cut a potato. What mode is at work there? Because everything here works by modes. The material energy, the external energy works by modes. Now, whether you're controlled by the modes or whether you're not controlled by the modes, that's another thing, but it still works by the modes.
Mm-hmm.
You take the knife, you push it on the potato. What modes are working? Okay, but at the same time, as you're doing that as a regular, that is your duty. So then there's goodness. So that you're doing it, that's goodness. You know, and then both of those other modes are working at once. Right? Now if I take the potato and I take a hammer, right, and I smash the potato, then what mode is that? Ignorance. Right? You're not exactly, unless of course, you know, you're one of these modern art guys, then maybe. Yeah, making mashed potatoes. Then after smashing it, then you put it in the pot and boil it, right? You know, yeah. So it's just pre-smash. Well, that you probably want to call smashed potatoes. You know, then there's different theories on whether you use a, you know, regular hammer, you know, that, or whether you use, you know, a 5-pound hammer, you know, because, you know, do it many times or just in one shot. Yes, sledgehammer, that would even be better. Yeah. Does that make sense? So what happens is that, fair enough, is that we put the things together. So Krishna consciousness is good, and being situated in goodness is good, and the brahminical understanding is good. So that's what we want to do. So that means everything else is then, you know, substandard. Right? So that's good for fixing oneself in Krishna consciousness. But as we go, we have to be able to start to discern what's happening here, that there's more happening. Is that the brahminical platform we're talking about is a mentality, not an occupation. You know what I'm saying? As far as occupation goes. But being a devotee, that's the supreme occupation. So therefore, it's above the whole Varnashram system. Right? But that doesn't mean that the forms of the Varnashram aren't being used. That means you can work on the level of consciousness and be on the supreme platform of Brahman. The same time as within the Varnashram, you're working within whatever is your natural Varnashram. But you're doing it with that consciousness rather than lower consciousness. Does that make sense? You know, the person's cooking, he's cooking for Krishna. And another person is cooking exactly the same preparation, has the same skill, but he's not cooking for Krishna. So it's not that the recipe changes, you know, like that. You know, it's like when you're not a devotee, you know, the pasta, you have to boil it for 7 minutes, but when you're a devotee, then it only takes 2 minutes, right? Because we're practical, right? You know, like that. Like that. Or, the pasta was made by a guy who's really inimical to, you know, the devotional process. So, you know, they don't want to boil, so it actually takes 12 and a half minutes. You know, they finally succumb later, just to have the boiler like that. You know, but make sure it's on really high boil like that. You know, otherwise it might take 16 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't change. The modes of nature, how they function, don't change. What changes is whether we're under their control or not. Does that make sense?
Because
yeah, but you're still in the temple. So what does that mean? How many devotees are in the temple? No, but I'm saying one is in the temple. But what are you doing in the temple? So can you do something you can't do? Like they want you to be the you know, driver and take everybody around and do all the things. Person can't drive, so does the driver?
I understand.
If you don't have the skill for it, you can't do it. It means you can't be the temple accountant if you don't understand how accounts work. You know what I'm saying? So what you're seeing is just, you move up through things you can do.
Okay. Not that you're necessarily changing the mode that you're conditioned in.
No. It's just a matter of the purification. So it's so impure now that you can't relate to anything, so therefore you wash pots. And by washing pots, you purify the heart. Then, what is actually the nature, you start to see. You know what I'm saying? So if, because the mo means you're dealing with motive goodness means brahminical, goodness, passion, the kshatriya, you know, passion, ignorance is vaishya, ignorance is shudra. Now, because of being in material life, one is acting on the platform of ignorance. Right? So, one comes into the temple, so one is ignorant. So he washes pots. But as he washes pots, he becomes purified. Right? Then, if his nature is to be, is that of a shudra, then he'll remain in that position. Though now he'll be able to take more responsibility and do different things. You know, but he'll be the, you know, do all the things. You know, the temple has the guy that he does all the things around the temple. You know, he fixes this and he does that and runs and gets this. And yeah. So, because he stayed there, but now he's doing it responsible. Before it was like, you know, someone had to tell you to wash the pots. Now he's, you understand, he's in a purified state, so he's able to act in that position for Krishna. But sometimes you see, if they were from a higher, but because of the modes, then they're lower, and slowly they come up, and then they get involved in this and that, and they're good on the, you know, book distribution because they make the money. Then as they become purified, then they come up, you know, into the administrative thing, and then sometimes they go to the brahminical. So you'll see is that they were always, that was their nature, it was just so covered. So you deal with something and what it is now. You don't deal with what it's supposed to be, you deal with what it is. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So some will go through like that, and some will just go up to a point and stop. Does that make sense? That's the point. But the point is what we're trying to elevate ourselves through. Being in the mode of goodness means we do things with knowledge because we're supposed to. Right? Mode of passion is we do things with knowledge because we want to. The results for us. And mode of ignorance is without knowledge, we do whatever we want. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's it. You had something there?
I was just thinking that coming from the Western conditioning, it's a little difficult for us to understand, but if there's Varnashram culture and communities for children and future generations to grow up in, it would become more natural, like understanding what one's nature is and how to do it. Because we're all coming from this whole different culture.
Right.
We don't even know how to see it.
Yes. In the future, it'll be easier because as you go, the generations will be following it. So, because you'll always have first generation who will be joining, you know, just straight from like that. So, because of the system there, it'll be much easier to fit in, you know. So, the point is when you're just dealing with first generation, it's the pioneer stage. So, the pioneer stage, then so many things that would be normally expected, you know, if you had an established social entity, you know, aren't there. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, you know, you have, you know, the country's being established. Then people go there and they do whatever has to be done and no one worries about it. You know, like America, one guy goes and, you know, plants apple trees all over America. It's like, you know, if the guy was out now with apple seeds and walking around and planting them, you know, there's a good chance he wouldn't make it out of the state. He'd be locked up, right? You know, but this guy got across the whole country, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just people that do that. You know, they just wear skins, sitting out there, and they trap animals and things like that. And other guys just go out in the middle of nowhere and put up a fence and say, "This is mine." You know, stuff like that. You know, so it wouldn't work in normal society. But as it goes, then there's rules, they implement laws, and then, you know what I'm saying? So the pioneering stage, it's understood that it may not work mechanically perfectly, but as long as the mood's right and they know where they're going, then it'll be successful, right? So it just makes it easier for the next generation to look at. But if they don't understand where it's going, you know, then it won't work there. So that first gen understands spiritually but not necessarily socially. Right? So therefore, spiritually, it's successful, which is the real point anyway. But socially, it may not be. Does that make sense? So as it's appreciated, then they'll be able to apply the social rules and have that complement the spiritual. You know? So we're trying to explain it in such a way that it is appreciated that it's important because it's God's laws, but even if it's not being you know, properly followed, it still works. But if you're against it, that will be a problem. You know what I'm saying? Just like if one's sinful, but that's not one's determination, the process will still work. But if you're determined to be sinful, you think that's all right, then it's a problem. So in the same way as if one's uncultured and one's committed to that, that won't be good. Does that make sense? So that's why we don't oppose it. We may not understand it, you know, like that, you know, what do you call it? Can't teach it, you know. You can't bend an old bamboo. So, you know, you just, you know, well, you know, we'll do the best we can and just like that. But it should be understood that it's appropriate, but the main thing is the proper mentality to understand it. Because it's more sophisticated, you have to have actually more skill and a better mentality. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, can this be confusing? Just like as a mother, just a little example there at the table. I was raised with, you know, Western, like no elbow on the table and two napkins, but then there's the whole Indian eating with your hands.
But there is no table, so you don't have to worry about the elbows. It's the same thing.
But it's the cultured Indian relation to the Prabhupada eating.
But it's a matter of practice. Means okay, let's take it like this way. Do you make a mess when you eat your burger?
Yeah.
Huh? Depends upon who you are, but that, you know what I'm saying? What about eating your toast? Do you eat that with a fork and knife? What about your pizza? What about your cookies? You understand there's so much that you eat with your fingers. Technically, in aristocratic society, asparagus can be eaten with your fingers also, but most people don't necessarily know that. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is artichokes you eat with your fingers. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that one's grown up in it, but the principle is not that it's totally lacking. There's absolutely nothing you eat with your fingers. But something like, let's say, I've seen when I went to China, they eat everything with their chopsticks. I saw one old lady eating a pear with her chopsticks. She balances the pear on the chopsticks. She holds them parallel. And then she bites like that. And she's able to turn it and do everything like that. So they may have a little more problem working with their fingers. But to be that dexterous with that, because they're light fingers, she might not have so much problem. You know what I'm saying? But the Western, so much as, you know, your standard, what you call American food, you eat with your fingers. You know, it's the stuff that came from Europe that you use your fork and all these different things with. Does that make sense? What I'm saying is that there's a principle. No, but you're getting confused in the detail. There's principles at work here. Catch the principle. Right? Means whether the table means the place where the food is placed. And it's generally within a certain proximity of the mouth, you know, that allows access by the hands. So you're still using, you know, a place to put the food. There's still the mouth and the hand. And the process of getting it from the plate to the mouth. You know what I'm saying? So these principles are in place. Now, whether you use a fork or a spoon, or whether you use your fingers, that's another thing. Does that make sense? But you have to also remember is that, you know, you gave the example of Prabhupada, he is eating Indian food, which is designed to be eaten with your fingers. You know what I'm saying? So if you're eating food that's designed that way, if you're eating food that's not, it's harder. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just a matter of the conditioning is there, but the principles of behaving at the table, you know, eating properly, interacting with that still remains. That's a principle. What we're getting confused is it's a detail that it's at a table instead of on the floor, or we're using a hand or a fork. That's a detail. The principle is the culture and the consciousness when we're eating. So you're taking prasad, you're with devotees. So that sets a mood of what's there. You know, say the problem is not that you're sitting at a table or eating with a fork. The problem is this, what's being discussed. You know, and if you kind of take that disgust, you know, generally that is the nature of the conversation. You know, the heavy management, or you know, they're sitting there eating and going, yeah, you know, yesterday I got diarrhea. I don't know. You know, I'm not joking. It's scary to eat in devotees who don't know the standards. You know, what they're going to talk about, what's going to be the... You have no idea. You know. Does that make sense? So that's more important. You know? Does that make sense? How much you eat, you know, these other things, these are more important. But when we deal with the vein, we'll throw it out and then we leave it back into our... Because what is the Western standard for conversation at the table?
Anything.
As long as it matches the nature of the people at the table. But the Vedic standard is not that. This has to be something that's going to be pleasant. Otherwise, how are you going to digest the meal? Because the idea of eating is to assimilate it. You know, it's not just one of those rituals that your mommy forces you to go through and all stuff like that. Does that make sense? The idea is assimilation, right? So therefore, how will it assimilate if one's in anxiety or so many emotions are there? Right? So it has to be pleasant, clean environment. Therefore, then, yeah, you know, if something's not clean, you get sick. Right? Cleanliness, anxiety, and overeating, these cause disease. So the Western table is not necessarily clean. Right? The conversation can create anxiety. Right? And, you know, overeating is not something that's defined. Does that make sense? So therefore, the Western table is designed, the common table is designed for disease. You know? Does that make sense? But if you're dealing on a more aristocratic level, then they're going to have, you know, you never overeat because that's gluttony. Right? You know, the place is really clean, though they don't understand purity. Right? And the conversation has to be very, you know, pleasant, and they're very good at it. You know what I'm saying? So it is there in the Western culture, it's just we're not on that level of culture to know that. Does that make sense? So the point is the principles remain. If you want to catch the principles of what the Vedic culture has given, then the principle can be applied to any detail. Then by applying that and becoming purified by doing that, because that's, you know, Krishna's direction, so we're doing that because this is the occupation, engaged in a particular type of occupation given by Hrishikesh. Right? So then we should then we'll be purified. Then it will be naturally, you know, come there that the opportunity is there to bring it more in line with a traditional Vedic kind of form. It'll be easier because one has understood the principle and one is purified. You know what I'm saying? But if we just change the external, then it's pious, so one will get credit for that. But if one unless one understands the principle, one may just go back because one doesn't really see the difference other than the external. Does that make sense? So eating is a culture. Then there's the particular environment it's in. So you can be cultured whether you're sitting at the table or sitting on the floor or, you know, sitting in your car. You know, it's not that you're sitting at the table so you're all nice and that, but then when you're in the car, then you're a real, you know, grub. You know? Does that make sense? The principle is still the same.
Once we understand the principle, it'll be easier for us to develop.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because the Vedic means all culture, everything is principle based. But it's just the math understanding is that the form of the Vedic, the form recommended in tradition, is that form which, you know, matches the lifestyle choice that God would use. Right? Because Krishna says in the Gita, he says, there's this, there's this, there's this, some say this, some say this. And then he says, but my opinion is, so that's his preference. So Shastra means there's his preference. And then there's variations on that that are okay. And then there's what's outside of okay. Right? Does that make sense? So the most important is understanding the principle and connecting with the Lord, because the principle is Krishna. Cleanliness is Krishna, or gentleness is Krishna. Now, even efficiency is Krishna. So that's why even somebody's attracted to the thing of just being practical and efficient, because the efficiency is Krishna. But they're not seeing it's Krishna. So they're thinking, I'm being efficient. You know, I'm doing that for Krishna. So that they connect it to Krishna, then it becomes connected. But they do even better if they understood efficiency is Krishna. And if it's Krishna, Krishna is all efficiency. So that means all aspects of efficiency would be open to them, rather than just the immediate. So they will only be able to work within their conditioned nature. Well, they could work beyond it. They could expand it. You know what I mean? Things, their conditioned ability. You know what I'm saying? You know, somebody could manage something very small, someone could manage something very big. So the difference is that is purification. So if one's purified, then one go from a small manager into a big manager. But it wouldn't be that he'd become a manager, you know, if he wasn't one. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you see, what was it? Yeah, Mukunda Maharaj and Guru Das, Kamal Krishna Maharaj, Yamuna. They were very good at dealing with people like that. But they're used to dealing with just, you know, who's around them and some other artists. And, you know, Mukunda Maharaj deals with some local artists. He's a local artist and like this. Like that. But then, because of devotional service and purification, they're able to deal with, at the time, in their minds specifically, the biggest artist on the planet. They're able to interact with people. They're in a very comfortable platform. So that's come about because of devotional service, not because they're qualified to work on. They're artists, so they could work on, they would work in that field, but not on that level. You know what I'm saying? If they hadn't been a devotee, they probably never would have personally met them. But being a devotee, then they could work on that platform. But it's not that, you know, does that make sense? Yeah. Right? So you may purify an improper quality, but that doesn't change the nature. You know what I'm saying? The person was, you know, nasty. So you could purify and he's nice. But it doesn't change his occupation. It doesn't change. Is that okay? So in here is that the principle, if it's caught, then the detail being supportive of the principle then gets engaged. And then it gets purified. And then it's just whether the situation warrants it. You know what I'm saying? So just like you're eating at the house, you eat however you want. If you're eating in the restaurant, you eat according to what is natural in that restaurant. You know, they give you, you know, plates and forks and spoons. You have to use them. You know, if it's a pizzeria, you don't have any. You don't. Nobody cares. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that will be the thing. But that's in the public, or in those situations. But in your own personal lifestyle, then you make your choices. Does that make sense? So it's fluid, but you have to know the principle. Alright? And understand what's being accomplished. Then you decide if the detail actually is accomplishing that. Does that make sense? You know, it's like Shastra mentions that if the elbows are kept within the knees, you know, the elbows or the hands are kept within the knees, that's considered pious. For them to be outside of that, that's not pious in sitting to eat. You understand? So it's the same principle. It means to put your elbows on the table means they're outside of the area of the knees. So it should be they're down here somewhere. Your hands are here, somewhere like that. Does that make sense? That's the Vedic system.
As a kid, we had to put fruits under our arms, so we wouldn't go like this.
Okay, yeah. And if they drop, then that's it. You can eat as long as you don't drop them.
Right? I don't remember who liked the fruit.
That's fair. I've mostly heard they use books, but you know, and that's also not necessarily good. You know, knowledge. You know. Does that make some sense? So then one becomes, by understanding the principle, the other supportive, it will be purified. Right? So here that principle is there, that's culture. So you're following because that's what your mother demanded. Right? But Shastra says the same thing. But we'll think, oh, it's two different things. No, it's one thing. This is where you don't understand the principle. That's why elbows don't go on the table. Because where are they? They're close to the body. And so then you just work like this. You know, because if you keep your hand here, you can get to your mouth, you can get to the plate. You know, if you can't, your plate's too far away. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same thing. But just you're sitting up, so the elbows come here. If you're sitting down, they go here. You understand? It's the same principle. You're saying there's no difference. It's just, you know, you understand?
Make sure you're eating from your own plate.
Yeah, or eating from your own plate. Watch the mongooses. Like that. If you're at a table, they can't get at you. That's one thing. It's the higher table. You know. Unless they climb up on the chair and jump on the table. Then you got a problem. Okay? You had something? Or was it over there? You had something? How do you define?
Yeah, in which varna, like you said, the Lord.
What's the focal point? Is it knowledge, you know, authority, economics, or art?
So
you understand that? That's what defines it. Now, what are the particular details of each? Those are details. The point is what do you think about? When you're sitting and thinking and things are going through, what is going through your head? Is it to deal with knowledge about something that's being taught? You know, or is it about, you know, establishing the proper form in society? You know what I'm saying? Is it about gaining money? Or is it about better ways to express the art? What is being thought about? You know what I'm saying? Now, any of those can be connected to Krishna. You know, so you could be thinking about how to make a nice altar for the Lord. So you're engaging that nature. So that's why it would be artificial to do something else. You may be good at it, but you'll only be good at the technique. You won't be good actually at the occupation itself. Because occupation includes the mentality, not just the technique. So that's why it says, better to do yours imperfectly, because you're fully engaged, than someone else's perfectly, because you're not actually fully engaged. Does that make sense? So the point being made is it's not by birth, it's by nature. So that's how you place. Because some will say, no, you're born a Brahmin, you're Brahmin. Or we say, no, you're Brahmin if you have Brahminical nature.
Why you mention one law and medicine as a particular Brahminical?
As which? Law and medicine, yeah. Because they are.
So why, for example, that type of law which is Brahminical, not others?
It's just meaning you're taking the Brahminical nature and using it badly. You know what I'm saying? Just like he's a Brahmin, so he's worshipping the Lord, or he's a Brahmin, he's worshipping Shiva, or he's a Brahmin, he's worshipping, you know, Kala Bhairava, you know, like that. You know, so it just starts going down, but he's still, the nature is Brahminical. But now, as he takes up the devotional process, he'll become purified, so that Brahminical nature will remain, but now he'll be worshipping Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That's not going to change. In a sense, your body doesn't change. When you join devotional service, it's not the day you walk into the temple and shave up, your face changes and all those things. You always wanted to, you know, have about your nose, your ears, like that, all changed and everything like that. You want to be a bit taller, so then it happens, and, you know, get rid of a little weight around here, put a little muscle here. You know what I mean? It doesn't happen like that. It stays exactly the same. So if the gross body stays the same, the gross body is a manifestation of the subtle body, means it stays the same. So what's changed? The consciousness. So you can purify the subtle and gross body, but it doesn't change. So therefore, its qualification for occupation doesn't change either. But it doesn't mean that you were necessarily doing your natural occupation before becoming a devotee. But it just means whatever it is, that's what you'll be, you know, will be best situated in. So better to do that. Like I knew one devotee. He was like one of the best I'd ever seen dairy farmers. You know, he just looks at a cow and can tell you if it's going to be a bull or a cow. You know, the child. You know, he knows everything about them. He learned from one of the top dairy farmers on the planet. But because of the mentality that, you know, only Brahmins are good and Kshatriyas are okay and Vaishyas are kind of like scum, and, you know, and definitely you don't have to even discuss the Shudras how scummy they are, you know. Then he didn't want to be a Vaishya because, you know, someone else is going to control him. So he had to be the managers. He was a terrible manager. Right? You know what I'm saying? But because he was also good, because of that nature, he's good with his hands, and, you know, like that, he liked the outdoor. He was also, as a hobby, good in gardening. You know, so for a hobby, he was into that. But when he wasn't able to be situated nicely in Krishna consciousness, then he went out, and now he does gardening as an occupation. Because it's a hobby, he likes that. But he won't go into dairy farming, which is actually his nature, because he's already gotten an idea that it's not good. Because of the Western idea that the top is good and everything's first is first and second is last. You know what I'm saying? So the major problem in dealing with Varnashram is because of this. No one wants to be the Shudra. Absolutely no one. And if you bring it up that they're doing occupational one, immediately there's fireworks. No, but it can all be raised. It doesn't matter. We're all equal. You know, so what? We're all equal. But you're doing Shudra job. You know. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Yes.
But if the Shudra spoke upon his art, the principle of the occupation is service.
Yes. So the art is for someone else. You know what I'm saying? If he's independently wealthy but he has an inclination towards art, it means it's a hobby. See, in other words, it's not what you like to do. It's what you do as an occupation. But it means of all the things you like to do, you can divide it into two categories. One is what you do for a living, and the other is what you do for fun. You know, for interest. So arts are natural for anybody who's refined. Right? Like Krishna knows the 64 arts. You know, it's just that they're on that level, cultural level, so they're so refined. But it's not his occupation. You know what I'm saying? So it can be that the person is a better musician as a hobby than someone who it's their occupation. But it still doesn't make it his occupation. Not that, yeah, he's a musician. No, he's, you know, he is a musician from the art point of view, that, you know, he has that culture. You know what I'm saying? So does that make sense? You know, it's not an uncommon thing. You hear celebrities and they have an area of art that they're very good at. You know, because, you know, someone, they're expert in, you know, cooking, or someone else is interested in, you know, does this or that. But that's a hobby. Does that make sense? You know, and then if you make the hobby your occupation, then you become redefined by the occupation. Does that make sense? So the Kshatriya, because they're practical and they're good at skills and stuff like that, it's not uncommon that when they aren't doing Kshatriya duties that they do skilled trades. You know what I'm saying? But if that continues and they're not doing the other, it's not just emergency, but they actually identify with it. Now they're a shudra. But they're a shudra from a fallen from Kshatriya. Right? Does that make sense? So then they'll be, you know, in other words, don't mess with shudras who are from fallen Kshatriya stock. They're really tough to deal with. Right? So in other words, the idea is we're trying to discriminate. What's the devotional? What's the material? Right? So something is material, and specifically the material is called material because it's not connected to the Lord. When it's connected to the Lord, then we say it's devotional, but it's not that the form changes. Remember, it's a reflection. Okay? So the reflection doesn't change. Right? Does that make sense? Whether you think you're the image in the mirror or you think you're yourself, you and the image in the mirror don't change. Right? So what's changing is consciousness. We're changing the consciousness from, you know, I am a shudra to I am a devotee. You know? And as an occupation, I do shudra work. Right? So the identity is with the devotee. So therefore, the cultivation and everything is on the devotional platform. And being on the devotional platform, then one advances through there. But it doesn't mean the occupation changes. One's attitude during one's occupation may change, but the occupation won't change. So instead of being a nasty shoe cobbler, you may be a nice shoe cobbler. You know, and probably even be better for business. Right? You know, so. Right? Unless you're too nice than the guy across the street. And he, you know.
You'll stop doing it for free.
Yeah. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Bhuta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.